Welcome to the Pennsylvania Office of Rural Health's podcast series on human trafficking. Our goal is to educate everyone who can target and stop human trafficking, which is defined as modern-day slavery that involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act. Human trafficking occurs in every state, every city, every town, and in almost every industry. Rural areas can be particularly vulnerable to trafficking and a haven for traffickers. Listen to learn what actions rural communities can and are taking to prevent human trafficking and how to help victims get the support they need.
Well, welcome to the Pennsylvania Office of Rural Health Human Trafficking Podcast. We're very pleased today to have Susan Mathias, the CEO, Transition of Pennsylvania, and the chair of Pennsylvania Association of Sexual Assault Centers.
Yes, that's correct.
Welcome, Susan.
Thank you for having me.
And Kendra Auger, president and CEO of Evangelical Community Hospital.
Thank you.
Welcome, Kendra. We're going to be talking today about an extremely important subject, human trafficking, and especially human trafficking here in rural Pennsylvania. So we're anxious to hear your expertise and stories and share with us some important knowledge and education on how we can learn more and also address this issue. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start out by asking, what sparked your passion to address the issue of human trafficking?
Well, I guess I'll start with that. I work for a comprehensive crime victim services program, and that's a lot of words, but basically in Pennsylvania, we have crime victim centers throughout the state, and there are 50 sexual assault centers and 65 domestic violence centers within, and they're all within 50 miles of every person in the state. So there's an amazing network of victim services providers, and I was involved with Wise Options in Williamsport, that is a sister agency of Transitions, for the first 3 or 4 years, and now I've been with Transitions in Lewisburg, which is, it serves Union Snyder in Northumberland County, and we serve crimes, victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, stalking, and other serious crimes. So my passion was ignited when I was in Williamsport, and there was a young woman who contacted us who had been recruited to go to Pittsburgh to be a model. And she was a pretty smart young woman, and she figured out pretty quickly that this wasn't on the up and up. But she did contact us, her mother did. And then we spent some time working with her, but it took no time at all for those people to just disappear. But what they were actually wanting her to do was to go and dance for men in Pittsburgh. So they lured her by the thought of being a model, and then they were going to take her off and do that. And that kind of piqued my curiosity. And then from that, I heard through a Pennsylvania Coalition Against Rape presentation about human trafficking, and it was a presentation by Krista Hoffman, who's presented today, and it really opened my eyes to what's happening throughout the state. And I see a huge connection because of how there's this new term, intersectionality, but there's so much overlap on everything, and sexual assault is present with involved somehow with every human trafficking case that we've been involved with. So in Transitions, we've been serving victims of human trafficking for the last 5 years, and since the law was passed, and the comprehensive law that pulled us out of the dark ages in Pennsylvania, and we're pleased that we're getting a conversation going so people really understand that it is in rural areas of Pennsylvania. So thank you to Rural Health.
Yeah, great. Kendra, what about you?
So my story is I'm, you know, the CEO of the community hospital in Lewisburg, and we serve Snyder, Union, Northumberland counties, as well as some of the other surrounding counties. And I was invited to serve on the board of Transitions, and well-respected organization. The hospital was the first hospital in the state to become a SANE program and offer sexual assault nurse examiner program. So I had been familiar with Transitions for that that reason. But I had been new to my position probably 3 years. And, you know, the other part of this is that I am a local individual. I've spent most of my life in that region in central Pennsylvania. So I go to the first meeting of the board and they start talking about human trafficking and I know absolutely nothing. And part of what was stated was that 88% of victims seek health care and indicate that they seek health care services at some point during their time of being trafficked. And I was astounded, and I knew nothing. And I thought, if I know nothing in the seat that I'm in, you know, then lots of people don't know anything. And we live in this idyllic part of the state, this idyllic part of the, you know, of the country, I would say. And my hospital sits right on Route 15, which is one of the most heavily human trafficked roads in the country. And so it was with that that I decided that I needed to do something and began to work with Susan and her team on what I could do in my role and what we could do as an organization to address this issue.
Wow. I mean, to think that how far we have come on this, but yet so far to go, and both of you have hit great points already. How have you both been able to bring the community together to address this pervasive topic?
Well, I'll take a stab initially. Transitions has been in our valley, in the Susquehanna Valley, for almost 45 years. So we started around a kitchen table in Sunbury, where there were a group of women who felt that there were no services for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and they were needed. And that grassroots effort of starting Transitions was happening all around the state. So there were about five or six other centers that opened about the same time with different names. So all throughout the state, we have different names. So that causes confusion. For instance, in State College, it was Center County Women's Resource Center that's now renamed themselves to be Safe, Center Safe. But they're part of this network, and they have become they're serving victims of all forms of crime now. And so human trafficking is, as I said, very connected. And what we had in place for a number of years is a really good collaborative effort with law enforcement and the hospital with the SANE program that's been around over about 25 years now in Evangelical, the first in the state, I might add, that we had a good comprehensive and collaborative way to work together. We had a sexual assault protocol, and we had a domestic violence protocol in place that we all know our roles, and it's very clearly defined. So adding a human trafficking protocol made perfect sense. So we have a specific contact person for any first responder who identifies a victim, and we respond appropriately. The thing that Transitions offers is that we're a completely confidential program. So the people that contact us have the privilege of their information, and we cannot release any information. So we work with people that very often are afraid of the system, and we give them a place to turn. That's true also with the hospital system. I think people are comfortable going to doctors in general, and so hopefully we can continue to find better ways to work even better than we are currently, which is pretty amazing. We have a protocol, and Kendra can talk about all that they've done in responding to the fact that we need to have a response, because when that victim contacts you, you need to respond immediately. They will leave, or they will not want to talk anymore. So there are a variety of ways that they'll, after they reach out to you, that you need to be there for them in a trauma-informed way.
And Kendra, you know, same question with you, but being part of the healthcare community, you have HIPAA laws and you have a lot of other requirements that you have to satisfy. How are you working with the community to bring them together?
So I would say that I look at community in a variety of different ways. One is I look at my internal community, my family of my workforce, my employees. And, you know, then I look at the business community of which I am a part. And, you know, you look at the broader community, you look at the community of individuals who is impacted in this. And so that was sort of how I looked at it. So I came back, talked with my immediate team and said, you know, I've stumbled onto this thing. And I think what I would tell you is that in my role as CEO over now it is almost 5 years, I've been looking at data from employees. And it used to be that employees wanted work-life separation. And there's much written about it. Then it became about work-life balance. And now it is about work-life integration. And when you look at data, employees are asking for information about the social issues that are impacting their lives. And they're asking about the social issues like suicide and the opioid crisis and things that are affecting your work at the hospital. And so human trafficking fits right into that. So what I did was I pulled, we have quarterly management staff trainings, and I invited a member of Susan's team in, and they did training with the management staff on human trafficking. And I can tell you that in all the years I've been at the organization, 20 years, and while in this role leading these things at that point, about 4 years, there's never been a more impactful management staff meeting than the day that they presented. And people knew nothing, and they were outraged, they were appalled. People were texting their children, calling for family meetings that evening, and it was very emotional. Men coming up afterward to Susan and saying, okay, I drive to work a long distance and I want to understand how I could maybe identify somebody on this road that's being trafficked. And so by the response we had there, we decided that we were going to roll out mandatory training to the entire workforce. So my workforce is about 2,000 people. We set up online training and require every employee to go through training on what it is, what human trafficking is, and ways in which to identify it. Then we set up, and I sent a blast email to the entire workforce through a vehicle I regularly use to communicate, where I explained what it was and why we were going to be addressing it. Then we set up elective training, and 1,300 of our 1,900 people elected to take additional non-required training. And wow. So it clearly lit a fire. So what we decided then to do after this additional training was we identified, you know, from what we've learned, the areas where we would most likely see victims. And that was the emergency room, urgent care, the women's health, OBGYN type clinics, and some of the other clinics. We identified champions. We also had an internal individual who was responsible for this. We worked on protocols and began, you know, the whole education process. Also in offices, if I'm 20 miles away from the hospital, what do I do if I suspect or have an issue? And we rolled out an overall protocol. And you know, what I can tell you is that over the course of now just about a year, we're coming up on a year since the training, we have identified 8 victims of human trafficking, 2 minors who required mandatory reporting, but the additional 6 adult individuals who have been trafficked. And we won an award from the Hospital Association for our optimal operations and for the work we're trying to do. But what I said to sort of wrap this up about community at the beginning is that if you want to affect the overall community, there's no greater way to do it than in the workplace. And, you know, you are appalled by something. You are outraged. You don't know anything. You're educated at work. You go home. You tell your family. You talk to your children. You talk to their athletic teams. You talk to your parents. You talk to your neighbors. And you begin to become aware and you speak out. And that is what my responsibility is to my community of my workforce. And they're very proud of the work that we're doing. Today when I arrived at this summit, 6 people were sitting here that I had no idea. They were frontline employees signed up on their own to be here today. They're passionate about that work.
That's awesome.
And then the other piece for me is that I speak about this as often as I can. And one of the challenges after I got settled down about this and Susan helped me, you know, understand it and realized what I could do with my workplace, she also challenged me that I had a voice in a broader community. And whenever I speak in business formats, she's come along with me to certain events. I've called her out at certain things, and I challenge the business community to learn about this. If you like where you live and work, you need to wake up to these kinds of things. And I think that's what I've learned. You know, I understand my role as a community leader. I hadn't really thought much about when I joined this board, especially, that my real role would be in giving a voice to something that most people either don't want to hear about or can't believe that it exists. I think I've also come to appreciate that it's opened my eyes to many biases, and I really am challenged in the workplace to break down the biases that we all bring to the table. And as caregivers in an organization, you have no judgment. And so, you know, we are using this as a building block for numerous conversations within our organization. But we are helping people, and people feel good about that kind of work.
Would the two of you be able to share an example of a situation where you were called, Susan, and were able to work with Kendra and her team on a human trafficking matter?
I will describe the ways that we do interact when we have cases with the people that contact us for help. Very often, people that are seeking assistance aren't self-identifying as necessarily being victims of domestic violence or trafficking. When they do contact us, we have a great relationship with the hospital. Sexual assault is an important collection of evidence in sexual assault cases is incredibly important. And the fact that Evangelical Hospital has had a SANE program for a very long time reflects also on the good community that knows how to work together, because we can call them, and they have added a child sexual assault examination, it's pediatric exam certification, to their program now, which we have no regional pediatric SANEs. So it was another big step to do that, but it allows us to have a place to turn when we need to work with victims in a sensitive manner. So I would use as an example a pregnant woman who had been being trafficked and kept in a motel, who had been there for several weeks and had been, her shoes had been taken from her, and she had no money and no identification. So she, when she did reach out to us for help, she needed medical assistance, and we knew that we had a sensitive and caring emergency room where we could take her for the kind of help she needed. So that's an example. We're talking about numbers, and numbers are a little elusive in this. The FBI and the Department of Justice estimates that there are between 100 to 300,000 citizens being trafficked in the United States. And a large percent of those are children, and children are increasingly becoming more present with human trafficking because of the internet. When we talk about can it be happening locally, you and I both read the newspaper, and every day there's a sexual assault, and very often it involves children occurring. So that's occurring. But what you also see are guys being hauled out of their garages for having child pornographic images of children. I hate to combine the words child and pornography. They should not match up. But sexually explicit images of children, and that is driving increased desire for promiscuous pictures of children is something that's really hard for us to fathom, but the internet is driving an appetite to create those images, and that's then involving more and more children being involved at earlier ages. So the fact that we have the ability to respond.
So this woman that you described, or if I were perhaps the person who had been trafficked, reached out to you, and then when would you be reaching out to Kendra's staff?
It's up to the victim completely if they desire medical care. So it's everything we do is victim choice and victim determination, but we can assure them of the kind of quality services that they'll receive. And they do not have to interact with the police if they don't want, which is very important in the process of making people feel more comfortable.
But that's a possible safe haven, if you will, to as a first step to get them away from their situation and be able to maybe talk to somebody.
Well, that's what the victim services agencies like Transitions provide, is we get people to safety. That's our number one goal always, is to make sure the victims and their families are safe. So we can transport them, we meet them at public places, but we get that can be very Dunkin' Donuts close by, and we can meet them in the parking lot there and get them to safety, which is really a critical first step, and then determining what they need. Very often it's like, say, a blanket and some food and a place to sleep for the night. So we provide shelter, but we provide group and individual counseling, and we get them the medical care that they need.
So what I would say to you is, obviously in healthcare you have all these privacy rules and laws that you have to abide by, but when I think back, you know, what happened to me the first night that I learned about this was, I've done physician practice management in my professional life, and there were two occasions where one was a physician came to me and said that he had had a woman come into the office for a pelvic exam, and her boyfriend would not leave her and insisted on staying the whole time through the pelvic exam. So as women, you know, your significant other is likely to stay with you as you have an ultrasound of a potential pregnancy or something. They don't stay for the pelvic exam. And he knew that something wasn't right. His gut told him that, but he didn't know what it was. And so he came to me and said, I don't know what to do. And I was like, I never heard of such a thing. And we talked about it, but we let it go. Another person from an office came and talked to me about a person who, they were an intake nurse and doing vital signs, and saw a tattoo in the inside of someone's mouth that was on their lip. And they asked the person about it, and they said, oh, it's my boyfriend's name. And they thought it was odd, but they let it go. After we went through these trainings, you have these aha moments about, okay, I have a colleague that calls it your hinky flag goes up. I call it your gut check. She calls it her hinky flag. But you know that something's not right, but you don't know what to attribute it to. And I would say that this is now one of the things that what I've seen in the emergency room and other areas where they've identified is, it's that gut check, that hinky flag of saying something's not right and I don't know what it is. You know, why does this young woman who is 13 years old, why is she so provocatively dressed? And it affords you the opportunity to learn what kinds of questions to ask, and you learn not to have judgment. You learn to know that it could be 5 or 6 visits until the person will talk to you, and you have no judgment. And so those are the things that we are seeing. And you can't make someone get help, but you can be kind, and you can be compassionate, and you can be non-judgmental, and you can say, my gut is telling me something's not right. And now I have another notion of, it's not physical child abuse, or, you know, it's not a, you know, just a regular medical issue. There's something wrong here, and now I have an idea, and I can, I'm prepared to ask different kinds of questions and seek physician counsel and figure out and get social workers involved and figure out how to at least have an attempt. And maybe it won't be at that moment in time that you help the person, but if you're not judged and if you are well taken care of, if you come back in again. And it's that kind of thing that I think that has given us pause. And I will sort of wrap that this part of it up by saying I lead a workforce that is 80% women. And I will make a sexist comment in saying that if you get a group of women wound up about something, something gets done. And in this instance, these women who are caregivers, who are in the front line and in the trenches, and this is not to say that I don't have men extremely passionate about that as well, but I think it is that, and it is that human basic, I'm an individual and I cannot fathom that this can take place in my community, that this could take place in my neighborhood, that my children could be targeted, and that, you know, it's just plain wrong, and all my biases about prostitution and oh this and oh that, it has to go out the window if you really want to start to make a dent in this horrific social issue. And the other part of it is Susan and I have used this to work together to, I work very closely with Geisinger on tertiary care for patients, and they had no sexual assault nurse examiner program. They did nothing in trafficking, and together we've been able to create an awareness, and they now, as a huge tertiary, an integrated healthcare delivery system, are working with all of these organizations across the state, because they will end up with the trauma, and they will end up with, you know, the long-term effects of these types of things. And so I think what I would say is that you can take a really small step, that's what I've learned, and, you know, in your own little corner of the world, and have it resonate out. And that's what I think Susan and I have tried to do in our little community.
So it sounds like to the advice you have for other communities, healthcare, social services, is to find a partner or partners and get that energy and that cohesive concern, take it into the workplace, that, as you say, that filtrates then through the family, through the school district, through the different activities. But we're not in this alone. There are people and there are others to help, and resources such as yourselves and the Pennsylvania Office of Rural Health that they could reach out to. Would you be willing to share your information if somebody would want to ask you, how do we get this started in our community? What would be your first step advice?
Absolutely. I think we're following that path as best we can. The outreach that we do is enormous. The more we talk about it in the state, we're asked to go to more places and talk about and inform people. So there's a real curiosity about it. And I would say that the best response in any community is to have a coordinated response. You know, get in touch with your victim services agencies, your healthcare systems, law enforcement, the courts, district attorneys. There may be a task force that's nearby. Definitely include them. Children and youth, there needs to be a heavy emphasis in serving children that are victims. And so making sure that children and youth, that has its mandates around human trafficking, are at the table as well, so that their protocols match up with, they're included in your protocols, and there's a good response. And we've had to really work on that, for sure. We work with the Area Agency on Aging because elder abuse exists. Now, this isn't just, we've been talking almost enormously, completely about human trafficking, about sexual exploitation, but labor exploitation is a big part of the same protections in Act 105, which is the state's comprehensive law. So there's not much happening, and there needs to be a lot more happening with regard to labor trafficking in the state.
Do we need to contact the legislators?
They wrote a good law. We are now seeking enhanced legislation that would bring more penalties against people who purchase the services of children, because we believe that the penalties aren't strong enough. And so it's called the Buyer Beware Act. So that's one of the pieces of legislation we're pushing right now.
And my advice is that any person can be a catalyst for change. And, you know, how you become that catalyst is through education and awareness and being willing to speak up about it and do your part to educate somebody else. And I think my organization is an example of that, not just in what we're doing within the walls, but with the awareness that we are working hard to create in our community.
Well, Susan, Kendra, thank you so very, very much for sharing all of this great information with us. And we will certainly make sure we have your information on the website, the Pennsylvania Office of Rural Health website. So if anybody has any questions, they could reach out to you. And we thank you for your time. This has been fabulous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Pennsylvania Office of Rural Health's podcast on human trafficking. We invite you to join us in our efforts to combat human trafficking. Visit our website at porh.psu.edu and go to the human trafficking page found under programs to learn more and find helpful resources.